Good morning. Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM in Toronto. And I'm Phil Taylor, your host. And we have a very important guest today, a very relevant to the headlines. We're going to be speaking to, and it'll be in about a half hour, we're going to be talking to Peter McFarlane. Peter McFarlane has an urgent book called Last Call for Canada, and I'm sure if you've had you've been watching, where do people watch? Online, on what I guess we call the television, and it's called Last Call for Canada, Sovereign Nation or Vassal State. Incidentally, Peter McFarlane has a Twitter account. At times like these, you want to be following people who are in the know and who've been sort of on the case previous. we've spoken to Peter previously on his show and to others who've been sounding the alarm, as it were, about how risky our relations are. They always have been, of course, potentially. It's kind of like knowing there's a fault line and that there will be earthquakes. And there are those who study the fault line between Canada and the United States, and Peter's one of those, and has called out the issues very clearly, and particularly in this latest book, Last Call for Canada. That's, of course, Baraka Books, and I urge you to get more than one copy and circulate it, because people really, you know, one ought not to go disarmed or unarmed into a serious struggle. And when I say armed, I'm speaking about history, politics, ideology, which looms very large. The word ideology should loom large in our minds, because what is the mindset of the great central power that is insisting that it dominate the world? It used to be shy about that, but it's become noisy. And again, Peter McFarlane has spoken about this loud and clear, and we will be asking him, of course, how he responds to this latest trade talk episode. We probably should point out that within CIUT distance has been under any illusion about this happening. It's unlikely to have a happy or early solution, I would think. It looks the moment like a very sharp contest, and we will be, looks like the breaking out the elbows again. And by the way, some of our premiers must be developing whiplash from, you know, these talks. At one point, there was some, we really ought to be, it's a problem, it's like we have a pretty good orchestra, but the conductor is crazy. So the conductor told everybody, all right, we're about, here we go, and now we're going to bring the various sections of the orchestra down into a softer mode, because we're going to be going to a happy conclusion. And so they all began to play the tune that way, and everybody said, okay, it looks like we have a deal, and we're going to put the American booze back on the shelves, and we're all about to make nice. And then suddenly the conductor... who has hair for the job, you know, conductors have to have strange hair, or none. But so our conductor, Donald, suddenly threw his hands up and pointed at the drum section and the cymbals. And the cymbals get very little work. So when they start banging, you know that something's up. And that is what occurred. And our poor premiers, who all had begun to softly sing about cooperation and friendship, and are today putting up signs again, we're not drinking any of that. Actually, there's a small crisis, according to the New York Times, in the drinking department. They say that actually Americans, and I guess people in North America, probably Europe too, are actually drinking less, and which is a good thing. I'm not a teetotaler, but, I'm not a, what's the word, I wouldn't pass a law, but people ought to drink less or not at all. But at any rate, they are, because people are more, you know, paying more close attention to their health and the damage to their vitals. And it's, of course, it has an economic side to it. It's like knocking down the cigarette usage. Tobacco industry went through a pretty nasty phase. There's several good films about it, about how they tried to stay in the game, and I guess they are to a degree. But again, we're talking, of course, about the moments after the decision by the Prime Minister of Canada to end the unhappy conversation with regarding the new trade agreements with the U.S. The thing that we call CUSMA apparently is that's off the table and gone. And here we are, it's late August, and the great Donald is facing a fall, and I don't mean literally, but the season, and there's going to be voting, and in November, unless he can find a way to look over every voter's shoulder, which he's diligently trying to do, I guess, he will end up with a Congress that is not under his control. And when that happens, there's going to be a domestic frenzy in the U.S. And it would be, you can predict one obvious thing. If the Democrats get control of Congress in November, there will be somebody on their feet saying this guy has to be impeached for the following reasons. And boy, there's no shortage of reasons. The question is, which one of them is the button that will cause a consensus to develop? So would it be the war? Would it be the economy? You know, these kinds of things. Perhaps how fortunate his family is every time he makes an important decision, somebody in the family gets rich, or at least that's the impression. This is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT 89.5 FM. I'll remind you that in about 20 minutes we're going to be talking to Peter McFarlane, who's written Last Call for Canada. He's also the author of, and that's Baraka Books. Obtain 2 or 3 copies, give some to your friends, make sure they read it. Get together and you're over coffee and get the fundamentals of the historic relationship and why Canada really has to understand, Canada itself has to understand what sovereignty means. Canada itself has to understand what independence is. We're going to ask Peter about it, but there's language used by the Prime Minister which should concern everybody, actually, because it's clear that one of the issues, a major one, is can we trade with other parties? If we want to strike a deal with a country in Asia, Africa, Europe, do we have to ask the State Department first? And frankly, the answer has always been yes. But given the hostility and the peculiar conduct of this special president, there's a awareness that we probably shouldn't always have to ask. But in discussing it, I find the language of the Prime Minister a little equivocal. And the term I want to ask Peter McFarlane about is he speaks of a type of economy he calls non-market. I think it's non-market economies. And he said, we share with the U.S. a concern about the non-market. Just to translate very quickly, he means China. And there's a quick thing to know. The China, and by the way, someone said there's, I think Carney himself said there are about 15 others that somehow come under that rubric. But we know that number one in the minds of the U.S. and the reason they are being so coercive, the reason is that they are not a good competitor. They've fallen behind in the race, and like a lot of people who fall behind, they start thinking of ways to see if they can maybe trip or affect the outcome of the race because they're not going to be able to catch up. So they think of ways that, frankly, it's called cheating to try to get back. And so they have this term. And frankly, it's an ideological term. This is China and the United States and Canada belong to the World Trade Organization. It has rules. It has, if one party is unhappy with the conduct of the other party, they can go to a process, a mediation process, where they put their case on the table and the other can respond and a decision can be made. That's how, that's to bring a little order into business. China plays by those rules. I didn't hear the prime minister say we've taken this case, a particular one, and argued it in front of a neutral body or a body of experts chosen by all sides. Instead, we've had an ideological argument, and they also load the dice. They also claim to know things about other countries, which are, again, not adjudicated, not proven, but asserted. And we've had hearings in Canada where, frankly, screwballs have come and made shouting and stupid comments about China, which are not substantiated, but and they are not Chinese. In the case of the most famous one, whose name escapes me, thank goodness, his training is that he's a born-again Christian who believes in doomsday. And that's, of course, his sideline. The rest of the time, he's an authority on China. He went in front of one of our committees and made all kinds of accusations about child labor and forced labor. These are ways to cheat in trade. And Canada and U.S. both rely on that. There is no finding by an international body. By the way, there's a little trick in this one too, but I'll just tell you about this one. There's no finding of that Muslims are especially badly treated in one region of China, or that they are in forced labor, except by the terms, arbitrary terms established by Washington and Ottawa. I think Ottawa, frankly, to be honest, ought to review that, because it's been a method of trying to leverage outcomes in dealings with China, and also to contribute to the new Cold War, which when you have a kind of relations we now have with the United States, there needs to be a reexamination. Avi Lewis has found a good term, a rebooting. You need to go back and look at all your assumptions. So listeners know, the organization, international body of Muslim states, which you're going to have to assume they might know more about Islam than you do, they have visited China, both as individuals, as members, their own diplomatic personnel and media, etc., but also as an organization. They visited the region many times. They've also wrote a finding, their own view of the situation of Muslims in China, particularly in the area called Xinjiang. And they have concluded that there is no discrimination there. But we did find this born-again Christian from Germany who says that there is, and therefore the entire Canadian Parliament, by the way, I would say to Avi, that includes the NDP, they all voted that it was a terrible situation and that there's child labor and forced labor. And this is all, in terms of the international community, it's baloney. And it's an Anglo, it's driven by the Anglo-Saxons countries. It's, to put it bluntly, the Five Eyes gang. They all agree. None of them speak Mandarin and none of them ever lived there. And they all were formerly occupiers and murderers and exploiters in that region. So as witnesses, you'd have to treat them as a little bit of suspicion, which does not happen here because ethnocentrism. This all goes to this issue of the prime minister's talking about non-market economies. It's a market economy in that you're in the same market with them. If you don't want to be in it, go ahead and say so. But you actually belong to bodies which can determine whether it's non-market. But this, that term is an ideological term. It's a businessman who doesn't want to, wants to give you the business, pardon me. He wants monopoly and he wants his own way. But you don't get, in the market, Mr. Prime Minister, in the market, you have to take your chances. If you got a product, is it a good one? Is it, does it meet standards, et cetera? And you're putting it out there for sale. If you can't make a sale, you can, if you think that there's some bad reason, well, take it to the international bodies, the World Trade Organization. I guess there's, you might take it to the, we never use the term anymore. What is it? The won't come to me. There's two or three international bodies that you could go there and complain. But really, we shouldn't be, it's going to be hard to defeat Trump on these fronts if you say that you agree with him about these matters, but that you're unhappy with the way he's treating you. Well, as we used to tell each other, don't feel like the Lone Ranger. Look around. There's countries all over the earth who have similar issues, and be humble and go and converse with them and see if you can develop a common point of view. But if you say you actually agree with him on security issues and on the on economic security, you agree with him and you are concerned about non-market economies. Actually, I'd say that you're a counter-revolutionary in the sense that you don't think that a people can choose to have a government and an economy on their own terms, and that you don't get to tell them. If you want to get along, you have to, I guess the expression is, go along. China fought for 100 years, 100, to get out from under the hammer of Britain and Germany, Japan, the United States, France. Do you know? I'll just remind you, Shanghai was a city where there was called an international zone, and there were signs, and you can look at them online. It's very simple. And the sign said, this is the city of Shanghai. It said, no dogs or Chinese in this area. And they enforced it. So China went through quite a bit of effort. They lost millions in the war that we were their ally. And boy, were we glad they were on our side, because they were fighting huge portion of the Japanese army. And it had the happy outcome of the defeat of Japanese militarism and fascism. Those were the Chinese. But immediately, we thought that the war is over, so we would choose the United States, Canada would concur, Britain would concur, that the U.S. would have hegemony. We would tell them where to get off, what to do, and we had a friend named Chiang Kai-shek. But his problem was that he couldn't hold on to power, and he was defeated by the People's Army, which really had a program to end foreign domination of China for the first time in 100 years. And they were successful. And instead of being a bunch of freeloaders or people who thought they should go to London and Washington to know how to run an economy, they built their own, rebuilt their society. China, prior to British occupation, had been basically a successful economy that was prior to the Opium Wars, et cetera. China wasn't a country that just learning about everything. China was a country of great learning, actually. The things went bad with the British and Americans, the Germans, et cetera. So they built themselves up, and they are back, as they say, and they made China great again, lo and behold. And so now there's this thing of we don't like the way they run matters. Well, but you know, that happens to be their affair. There was an expression in American, and the British, Canadians too talked about it. They said, who lost China? Well, nobody lost China. China found China. And the idea that it must have been some mistake by one of the generals, maybe MacArthur, maybe I forget the other guy's name, certainly wasn't Joe Stilwell, because Joe Stilwell said we ought to leave China alone. By the way, it was subversive to say leave China alone, because we had to rescue them. At any rate, they were not rescued. But we can't get over this thing. So now we have a thing that we call it, call what they are, their very successful economy, call it non-market. Peter McFarlane, by the way, who's going to be coming up, he visited China fairly recently. So we're going to get his insights into it. But all objective observers acknowledge, and I think it was even Trump's daughter-in-law, somebody happened to visit there recently, was in awe of some of the marvels in this, how modern, how advanced China was in so many ways. And this has caused consternation here. So anyway, my whole point is to come back to the introduction of ideological language. It's sort of hidden, but it's there, that you're talking about non-market, et cetera. There is a market. If you don't want to be in the market, so go back to farming or something. I don't know. You take up something else. But unfortunately, for those of you who like to, you know, believe in the market, it's there. And you can't call somebody names just because he produces something better and cheaper than you do. You have to figure out what's wrong with you, not what's wrong with him. And incidentally, the same applies to Washington. They're trying to use muscle and brass knuckles to get what they want, because they're not very good at these basic things. And there's a whole category of economics and modern politics that needs to explain how the U.S. has gotten itself into so much trouble, because it seems to be very good at extracting other people's minerals, other people's fuel, gas, oil, whatnot, and also trying to control them, other people. And that has created a number of problems, domestic and foreign. Maybe a kind of a note on this, I would urge listeners to this Hayter Report, read about Mark Twain and a wonderful mind, William James, not Henry, his brother William, who formed a group at the turn of the last century called the American Anti-Imperialist League. Mark Twain was, of course, the neon sign. Do they exist anymore? On the front of the operation, explaining that if a republic tries to become an empire, it will destroy the republic. That was a simple idea, because right of self-determination is built into the concept of a republic. So republics that say, we are now going to take over the Philippines, we're going to take over actually Hawaii, we're going to take over this country, that country, in the name of our superior morality. Twain said it's an obvious paradox, it'll be the end of you, not your. You're not getting greater. You're getting less great, because you don't believe the doctrine of your own principles of we hold these truths to be self-evident that all nations, that all people are created equal, and the right of people to resist empire. So Twain and Company, you can find it online, the Anti-Imperialist League. We probably ought to join it. I don't know if Twain would have, no longer ahead of, I think his name's on the masthead. But you have to know that some of the best thinkers in America told him in approximately 1901 and 2 that don't do it. That you're going to destroy your own republic, and you have to live together with other nations as equal partners. This is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. We've got about a couple of more minutes here before we contact Mr. McFarlane. I'll just tell you, there is other disquieting things, and I think Canada should be saying something about it. Mr. Tusk, who's the leader, I'm going to call him the leader of Poland, I forget his title, gave a speech reacting to the fact that Germany has arrested or named, you know, I guess they have them in custody, but at any rate, those that they say blew up the Nord Stream pipeline. That was a pipeline which was bringing cheap natural gas to Germany from Russia. And Tusk said the following. They should release the people who Germany said blew it up. You're talking about an attack on the German economy, and the German, and they're part of an international business to bring a pipeline, and it is destroyed, sabotaged, and the leader of Poland says there's no shame on the people who blew it up. There should be shame on the people who built it. Let that sink in. And he's talking about Merkel, Angela Merkel. It was her, under her tutelage, that this all happened, she and the Russians, because it was a good deal. It was business. So the leader of Poland is basically praising sabotage. Further disquieting aspect of this is that he's talking now and mocking, I mean, that's a mockery of the German state by the Polish state. And the leader of the German state, Mr. Merz, is talking about building Germany to be a great military power. Wait for it. Again, he said. Underline the word again, Germany should be. Canada ought to have an opinion about that, because we are part of this phenomena that Peter McFarlane refers to as Atlanticism, We'll ask him about that. But we're some sort of special breed of people, economists called Atlanticists, and we're with them. And again, this is on Mr. Carney to explain. But if we are, shouldn't we say to Poland, actually, for a head of state to praise or to say that it wasn't criminal to blow up an economic corridor, literally sabotage it, that there's no shame, no problem at that? What has happened to international law? This is the kind of thing that should underline all of our discussions. We're going to have to grow now into a country that actually has its own face and its own political line, if I can use a really old-fashioned term. This is Taylor Report, CIOT. We're going to hear a little music. I'll bet it's from the Travelers. It is indeed, says Pedro. So we will have some of that, and we will talk to Peter McFarlane.